Everyone's settled? Yes, you have. Okay. More sweet than all other sweet things. More auspicious than all other auspicious things. The greatest purifier of all purifying things. The holy name of Sri Hari alone is everything. The entire universe, from exalted Brahma down to the lowly clump of grass, is a product of the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord. The only thing that is reality, reality, again I say reality, the holy name of Sri Hari alone is everything. That person is a true preceptor, or a true father, a true mother, and a true friend also. Only if they teach one to always remember the holy name of Sri Hari alone is everything. There is no certainty when the last breath will come and put an abrupt halt to all one's material plans. Therefore, it is wise to always practice chanting from very childhood. The holy name of Sri Hari alone is everything. Lord Hari eternally dwells in that place where truly exalted, spiritually advanced souls sing in the mood of pure devotion. The holy name of Sri Hari alone is everything. Oh, what a sorrow, what a great sorrow, more painful than any other misery in the world. Mistaking it as a mere piece of glass, people have forgotten this jewel. The holy name of Sri Hari alone is everything. It should be heard again and again with one's ears. It should be uttered over and over with one's voice. It should be perpetually sung and sung anew. The holy name of Sri Hari alone is everything. It makes the entire universe seem insignificant as a blade of grass. It splendorously reigns supreme over all. It is full of eternally conscious divine ecstasy. It is supremely pure. The holy name of Sri Hari alone is everything. Actually, we'll chant it, but just say a few words before we start chanting. I was introduced to this bhajan, it was 2004, when Sridhar Maharaj departed, was it 2004? I think so. I had never heard it before, and Giriraj Maharaj, who was close with Sridhar Maharaj, but couldn't come to Mayapur at the time when Sridhar Maharaj was preparing to depart. He wanted to send something what he considered to be valuable as a gift to Sridhar Maharaj, as a friend. So he sent Sarvatma with this bhajan, and he asked him if he would chant it for Sridhar Maharaj. And that was his offering to Sridhar Maharaj. And I happened to be in the room at the time, and that's when I got first introduced to this bhajan. I had not heard it before. Anyways, I thought it would be appropriate to speak a little something about the holy name, because we just had a very nice festival in North Carolina for those who went? He said, Oh, quite a few. Last week. And very nice event. It was mostly chanting all day and some katha. And different kirtaniyas had come. It was a good opportunity. For me, it was the first event I've been to in North America probably in about 15, 20 years. So, major event. So I was impressed to see how many people. I think they said 1,600 people were attending. And everyone seemed to be very inspired. And those who I spoke with, focus was chanting. And not just chanting, but hearing. And obviously, when there's intense chanting, an attempt to hear the holy name in the association of any senior Vaishnavas, the heart becomes stimulated. And at least from those who I had spoken with, and many expressed that that's what they experienced. So here, this bhajan says the holy name is everything. So if it's everything, certainly it must be, there must be something relevant about the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra for all of us to hear. So let's first chant this bhajan and then we'll speak a little bit about it. This melody is how I heard it. So Madhuram Madhuri 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 translation altogether. So these are 8 verses known as Kevalastaka. Interesting, I always make this point known that the author is unknown. But we should not be fearful. There are other examples in our tradition of things that were discovered by unknown authors, but nonetheless, just as Haridas Thakur and Haridam Chintamani described how it was a booklet that was found about the holy name, and it was understood that it was obvious that the author of that booklet must have had some contact with Haridas Thakur. And we also have an example of Lord Chaitanya himself when he came in contact with one Brahmin in Mathura simply by seeing him dance and hearing him speak. It was obvious that this Brahmana must have had some contact with Madhavendra Puri. And therefore, he accepted that Brahmin as a Vaishnava, because even though he did not know anything about him. So in the same way, we see here this song, although it's an anonymous Sanskrit poem, that nonetheless its teachings are indicative of somebody who actually must have had some contact with the pure Vaishnava, and therefore they were able to appreciate the potency of the pure holy name. And it's called Kevalastakam. Astakam means 8 verses, 8 prayers, and Kevala, of course, is pure devotion. Madhuram Madhure Bhopi, which is the first verse, indicates that the holy name is more sweet than all other sweet things, more auspicious than all other auspicious things, and the greatest purifier of all purifying things. The holy name of Sri Hari alone is everything. Obviously, the author appreciates that the holy name is none different than Krishna. And because his conclusion throughout this entire prayer is that the holy name is everything. The holy name of Hari is everything. Just as one who has pure transcendental vision perceives Krishna's presence everywhere. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. For one who is in pure Krishna consciousness, he sees Krishna manifest everywhere throughout the entire creation, both within the material and the spiritual worlds, due to his perfect vision. And therefore, Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, as Srila Prabhupada oftentimes quote from that verse, that the holy name of the Lord is transcendental, the blissful, bestows all spiritual benedictions. It is never a material name under any circumstance. It is no less powerful than Krishna himself. It is never conditioned by material nature. It is eternal, liberated. And that is because Krishna's name and Krishna, they are none different. So, one who sees Krishna everywhere, then he understands that siddhis by seeing, coming in contact with Krishna. He sees that the holy name of the Lord is everything. And I oftentimes reflect, I think there's an old song, it's back in the 60s maybe, about a person who sees, everything he sees is, reminds him of his lover. I can't remember the name of the song. Maybe you remember, Pierre. Yeah, that's an old song. When you see a face in the street, immediately you think they love their lover, or they see something. Anyways, maybe it's the 50s. It's an old song. I can't remember the name of it, but that's the essence of the song. So, obviously for a person whose heart is completely absorbed in something or in someone, everything they see reminds them of what they're absorbed in. It's like there's that verse in the 10th canto of the Bhagavata, describes the characteristics of Paramahansas who have accepted Krishna within the core of their life, within the core of their heart. There it's described, I think it was spoken by Sukadeva Goswami to Pariksit Maharaj, Paramahansas who accepted Krishna within the core of their heart, that they are attracted to the topics of Krishna as if such topics are fresh and fresh, they always speak about Krishna. It goes on to say that these persons are spontaneously attracted to speaking about Krishna because they've accepted Krishna within their heart, and therefore they see Krishna everywhere and they always speak about him. And the analogy that is given, that their spontaneous attraction to speak about Krishna is the same as materialists who are spontaneously attracted to speak about sex, women and sex. It's the verse actually gives this example, that just as a person whose heart is always filled with something, that whenever they see something, it immediately stimulates the remembrance of what their hearts are absorbed in. So for those who are always absorbed in mundane thoughts, whatever they see, it merely brings remembrance, whatever they see. I give the example of my own experience. I remember working as a builder with carpenters. We used to build houses, and we used to work on these big projects, and without fail, any time an attractive woman would walk by, everybody was talking about her. These were the people that I associated with, as working with, before coming to Krishna consciousness. Without fail, anyone that walked, did you see that one? And then, why? Because their hearts are filled with such thoughts. So anytime they see something, immediately it stimulates katha, discussion of topics. So Shukadeva Goswami uses that analogy, that they're attracted to speaking spontaneously about Krishna again and again and again, in the same way as materialists are spontaneously attracted to speaking about women and sex. Because the devotees, the Paramahansas, accept Krishna within the core of their hearts. Therefore, because Krishna is always in their heart, they're always meditating upon Krishna within their heart. They see Krishna everywhere, and wherever they look, it really, it's their inspiration to speak about Krishna, because they don't see anything separate from him. So it's what's in the heart. So, obviously for this author, what was in his heart, that for him, the holy name of Sri Hari is everything. Wherever he looks, he always remembers the holy name of Krishna. And and one of the characteristics of the holy name is very sweet. more sweet than all other sweet things. Of course, Rupa Goswami explains in Upadeshamrita that the one who's been afflicted by the jaundice of vidya cannot taste anything sweet, even though the holy name, form, qualities, pastimes of the Supreme Personality of God are all transcendentally sweet, just like sugar cane. But one who's been afflicted by the jaundice of avidya cannot taste anything, cannot taste the sweetness of sugar. He says, but it's very wonderful that if one very carefully goes on chanting these sweet things every day, then what happens is that the root, the disease becomes destroyed at the root, and the natural sweet taste of the holy name of the Lord will gradually awaken. Just as a person who takes sugar is the cure for jaundice, but it tastes very bitter. But the more he continues to eat sugar, then because it's even though it tastes bitter, it's the cure. And gradually he begins to experience the natural sweet taste. So in the same way, Krishna's name is transcendentally sweet. But for those who've been afflicted by the jaundice of avidya or ignorance, they cannot fully taste the sweetness of the holy name. But if they go on chanting, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is recommended for those who are committing offenses. But even though they may be committing offenses and they might may not taste the sweet name of the holy name of the Lord, but if they go on chanting gradually, they simply go on chanting gradually, they'll become free from the offenses and begin to experience the sweetness of the holy name. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, also Kaviraj Goswami, in relationship to Rupa Goswami's verse about the holy name of the Lord, where he describes that two syllables Hare Krishna, he describes that when he chants these two syllables, his senses become stunned, his senses become inert, his mind becomes stunned, and experiences so much nectar in these two syllables. And Krishna. And then when he read that verse before Lord Chaitanya came before Rupa Goswami after composing that verse, and he said to Rupa Goswami, the verse that you have written looks like a string of pearls. It's very beautiful. Can you please read it? And then Rupa Goswami was not so much inclined, but because Lord Chaitanya insisted, he began reading the verse. And as he was reading the verse, Haridas Thakur, who was standing nearby, when he heard the verse, Haridas Thakur went into complete ecstasy and fell on the ground in tears, manifesting ecstatic symptoms by hearing the verse of Rupa Goswami. And Kaviraj Goswami explains that the nature of the holy name is such that one must hear about the truth and beauty of the Lord's holy name by hearing the revealed scriptures from the mouths of Vaishnavas. There's no other way which one can actually experience or taste the sweetness of Krishna's names. And he was speaking in reference to Rupa Goswami, that Rupa Goswami had composed this beautiful verse, which is, of course, as good as Shastra, glorifying the holy name of the Lord. And by his composition of that verse and by his recitation of that verse, when Haridas Thakur heard, he went into ecstasy. He fell on the ground. Of course, we may not go into ecstasy when we hear Krishna. In fact, oftentimes, unfortunately, we, instead of going to ecstasy, we go into slumber. That's and it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that's when he describes that as one advances in Krishna consciousness, he says that the symptom that one has actually come to a that stage of attachment to the holy name of the Lord is that he's freed from laya, or the tendency to sleep, falling asleep, laya, vikshepa, or becoming distracted. We may not experience the same ecstasy, says Haridas Thakur, when he hears these verses about the holy name of the Lord, unfortunately. But nonetheless, we've been speaking about this topic a lot lately. Even though that we may not experience ecstasy upon hearing the glories of the pure holy name, or hearing the words spoken by the pure devotees about pure devotional service, or about the activities and pastimes of the Supreme Lord, we may not go into ecstasy. But nonetheless, Krishna becomes very pleased with those devotees who at least develop a desire to hear these topics. And when one cultivates a desire to hear these topics, then although one may not be able to experience the bliss of Krishna's presence within his name, and Krishna's presence within those words spoken about him, Krishna, who is within the heart, becomes pleased with the devotee who's desiring to hear that, and he acts within the heart to clean and to help to purify the heart, and because he accepts the desire to hear as service. Just the desire to hear, he accepts that. Even though we may hear about, and I speak about this a lot because it's my feel that many times it's relevant sometimes when we speak about, because this whole song is about pure devotional service. It's about the pure holy name. It's about those who are givers of the pure holy name, those who are experiencing the sweetness and taste of the pure holy name. And when we hear these things, sometimes we may question, you know, how is this really relevant to someone like me who doesn't experience this? Or how is it that it's really relevant when I see how Krishna reciprocates with his pure devotees? Well, that's understandable. Krishna reciprocates with his pure devotees. I can read about these things and accept it. His pure devotees, it's clear. But what about the rest of us? Why? What's so valuable in hearing about Krishna and his pure devotees when I'm sitting here looking in my own heart and see so many anarthas and so many obstacles and so many things that are preventing me from tasting the bliss of the narrations of pure devotional service? But the point is that even though we may not see it as relevant as in terms of how we're experiencing it right now upon hearing these narrations, just simply the desire to hear it and to give the time daily to hear of the characteristics and descriptions about the pure holy name, pure devotional service, Krishna's pure devotees, and Krishna's pure pastimes, which are never tinged by material qualities. Simply the desire to hear these narrations, Krishna accepts that as service. And he understands that because the devotee has that sincere desire, he acts within to purify. And therefore, not only is it the sweetest, as this song goes on to say, not only is the holy name the sweetest of all sweet things, but it's the most purifying of all purifying things. This thing keeps on going off, excuse me. It's more sweet than all other sweet things, the greatest purifier of all purifying things. So, our only hope for purification is to chant the holy name and to hear the narrations and glories of the pure holy name, and to not hear or to not desire anything material in relationship with the holy name, but to actually to desire pure devotional service. Is it a problem? It's heavy. I'll put it on myself, okay? It's really heavy, garland. I was hoping everyone would forget. Was it offered to Prabhupada? I have to accept.
Okay. Yes.
Alright, then I must accept. Usually, sometimes, if devotees offer their ground in Ukraine, at first the question is it offered? And they say no. So, we're purifying. Yes, purifying to wear Prabhupada's business. So, our only hope, that's right, our only hope for purification is to come in contact with the pure holy name. Oh, I remember what I was going to say. And not to chant the holy name of the Lord for some material gain, for some material purpose. Like that quote, I think I read it here. I just gave class on it a couple of days ago in Prabhupada Village, where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives a very, very clear instruction about chanting. How should we chant the holy name of the Lord? And he says, pure devotees do not chant. Did I read this here? What? Pure devotees do not chant the Lord's holy name, the Lord's names, to counteract sinful reactions, to accumulate piety, to attain heavenly pleasures, to mitigate famine, devastating epidemics, social unrest, disease, civil strife, or to obtain wealth or an earthly kingdom. So here we see again, pure devotees, they don't chant the Lord's names for themselves. And that's what he says. Since the Lord is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to ask him to fulfill our wishes is to treat him as our servant. This is an offense. Therefore, calling the Lord's names for any reason other than to attain his devotional service is useless. Jesus Christ told us not to take the Lord's name in vain. However, this does not mean that we do not need to always chant the Lord's names while sleeping, awake, eating, or enjoying happiness. To chant the Lord's name begging for his service is not useless activity, is our only duty. But to make a show of chanting for some other purpose, in other words, to fulfill our own desires, is useless. We should not take to the chanting of the Lord's names uselessly. We should not chant to attain religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, or liberation. Instead, we should always chant to attain the Lord's service. So, you look like you have a question, do you have it?
Yeah.
Useless, right? It's about useless?
Yeah.
A lot of people like to ask.
Because in the Bhagavatam, you know, it says, Akama.
Savakama va moksha kama udara diti vena bhakti yogina yujita
purushapara.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it does say that. But there's also another verse in the Bhagavatam, and let's try to understand what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was saying here. Because as soon as people hear useless, I always heard that even once chanting the holy name of the Lord derives some benefit. How can that be said to be useless? My understanding, it's useless for pure devotional service. And there's a verse in the Bhagavatam spoken by Devahuti. She says, anyone whose work does not elevate him to religious life, anyone whose ritualistic performances do not raise one to renunciation, and anyone who is situated in renunciation that doesn't lead to devotional service to the Lord is like a dead body although breathing. Right. So, in other words, if it doesn't lead to pure devotional service, it's useless. So in the same, someone might say renunciation. We always hear about renunciation. How beneficial it is to But she says, it's useless. It's like a dead body. Or just as Prabhupada always quotes that verse, Bhagavat Bhakti Hina Sajati Shastram Chapastapa Apranasina Pranasiva Dehana Mandalam Lokaranjanam. That if a person is devoid of devotional service, even if he's expert at chanting all kinds of Vedic mantras, even if he performs all kinds of austerities, even if he's very learned in the scriptures, or takes birth, great family and nation, they're all like ornaments on a dead body. Useless. So some might say, chanting Vedic mantras? Knowing all the verses, of so many verses? How is that useless? But it's useless, like an ornament on a dead body. If it doesn't lead to devotional service to the Lord, it's useless. So, without coming to pure devotional service, what is the use? That's my understanding of what he said. But the point that he's making is, as long as you think that the Lord is your servant, you'll never come to pure devotional service. That's his point. Yeah, but Dhruva came in contact with Narada Muni. Because of instructions of Narada Muni that were given, he became purified. Even though he was materially motivated. So Narada Muni was very expert in dovetailing his, understanding his motivation so he could become purified. So because he came in contact with the pure devotee, by the mercy of the pure devotee, he became purified. So simply when one hears the holy name of the Lord from the lips of a pure devotee, Prabhupada says, whereas milk touched by the lips of a serpent has poisonous effect. If one receives the holy Sampradaya Vihina, one receives the mantra, but if it's not in an authorized Sampradaya, it won't have the desired effect, even though it's the same holy name. So if one comes in contact with the pure devotee of the Lord, and even though one may be impure, akama sava kama va moksha kara udavadi, yes, even though he may be filled with material desires, if he comes in contact with a devotee and renders service to Krishna by the mercy of the devotee, he becomes purified. Because the devotee is the guardian of devotional service, and the devotee is the one who helps him. He understands, just as we oftentimes give that example, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, when the seed of Shraddha, faith, is awakened within the heart by association with a devotee, then that Shraddha, that faith, needs to be protected. Just like when a newborn baby girl takes birth and the parents are very, very intent to protect the baby girl from heat and cold and from hunger and thirst and from dangerous creatures, and the mother also nourishes the child so that the child can grow strong and therefore by its own strength can be protected from these things. So in the same way, when Shraddha takes birth in the heart of a jiva, then that Shraddha needs to be protected from karma and jnana, dangerous things. So by the mercy of the guardians of pure devotional service, by their mercy, even though we may have impure desires, just as Narada Muni told Dhruva to chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And he chanted it, and he performed very severe austerities, and although he was materially motivated, he wanted the Lord, but he followed Narada Muni's instructions. And as a result of following Narada Muni's instructions and chanting of that mantra, the Lord appeared to him, and then he realized, I come here looking for a piece of broken glass and found the most valuable jewel. So, by the mercy of a pure devotee, yes. So, by the mercy of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his instructions, we can come to understand and come to realize that we shouldn't be chanting the Lord's names for ourselves. And therefore, if we go on chanting simply in a selfish way, and even after hearing so many good instructions on that matter, if one keeps on going on committing offenses, he can chant the holy name of the Lord for millions of births and he'll never get the love of Godhead, which is the ultimate goal of that chanting. That's the goal. Without achieving that, useless. Useless. Because he, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, realizes the full benefits of chanting the holy name of the Lord and wants nothing else than to present the full glory of the holy name of the Lord and to give everyone the opportunity to taste the highest experience and realization and the highest treasure, jewel, which is unalloyed service to Krishna. The prema rata nadana, the most precious and valuable jewel of pure bhakti. And anything short of that is useless. Useless. And therefore, for one, Kaivalya Narakayate Jitasa Pura Kashi Pushpayate, that verse Prabhupada used to quote all the time by Bodhananda Saraswati. Anyone who's received the merciful glance of Lord Chaitanya, then to hear about Kaivalya, it's like Naraka, it's like going to hell. To hear about, to hear about the position, to hear about all the higher planetary systems, they're all just like phantasmagoria. Or to experience senses, the senses become like venomous serpents with broken fangs and no longer have any poisonous effect. Vishwam Purna Sukhayate, the whole universe becomes joyful, and the positions of demigods, whatever exalted positions they may have, there are positions that such a person becomes like insignificant insects, their positions. Having received that merciful glance of Lord Chaitanya, which is pure devotional service. So having once experienced this, everything else is pale. Prabhupada would often quote that verse by Madhavendra Puri when he offers his prayers, forgive me now that I've experienced Krishna, I'm chanting his names and I no longer feel obliged towards the Vedic rituals, I no longer feel obliged to anything else. These things are all, for me, they're all useless, futility. Now I think wherever I go, I can just simply remember Krishna, I'll be perfectly satisfied. All these other things are useless to me, basically he says. Or Bhava Mangala Thakur, he says that now that I experience Krishna, I remember Krishna, then, even liberation stands waiting at my doorstep with her hands folded and the Dharma, Artha, and Kama are all standing right behind her waiting to serve me. But I have no interest in these things. I just satisfy just simply to remember Krishna. Everything else for me is useless. So someone may say, Dhamma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha is useless. Well, Bhava Mangala Thakur was useless. It was useless. Because having once experienced Krishna, that's how I understand the utility. He said it five times here. Obviously, he's an acharya. We have to find the explanation to understand why he said it. And that's my understanding of why he said it. Everything else is useless in comparison to pure devotional service. Yes?
Two more examples given in the explanation. There is an example in Chaitanya Charitamrita of Nanda Mukherjee, who was motivated to get rid of his sins.
Motivated to? I can't hear you, I'm sorry. I've got this behind me. You have to speak a little louder.
Andar Bhakrari was motivated to get rid of his karma, I mean the sin, by chanting holy name. So he was instructed to chant holy name by Narada.
Yes.
And again, another example of Valmiki Rishi.
Bara.
Yeah. So he didn't have a devotional service motivation. Or Bhagrari didn't have devotional service motivation. So how would you explain these two situations?
He wasn't motivated. He wanted to become free from reactions, yeah. But look who told him! Look who told him to do it.
Yeah, but both were like simple reactions.
Huh?
For Madhuri as well as Valmiki.
Yeah, but he had to give something up. In other words, he followed Narada Muni's instructions. Narada Muni told him, "Okay, you have to break your bow." Yeah. He instructed him. He said, first, break your bow. Well, how can I do that? This is my whole life. This is my livelihood. Narada Muni said, no, break it. It just depends on what I'll give you. So because of his association with Narada Muni, he was able to break his connection with the past and to properly accept that which Narada Muni had given him. Again, as we were explaining this, by the association of a devotee, Bhagari became a very great exalted soul.
That was kind of initiation for Bhagari?
Yes, in fact, Prabhupada said that right in the purport. He said when Bhagari broke the bow, he says, this is initiation. This is what it means to break one's connection with the bodily concept of life. He said, this is real initiation. Otherwise, without that, it's not real initiation. One has to break his connection with the bodily concept of life. And because Bhagari was still, before making that, in the bodily, he was thinking, how can I live? And Bhagari said, no, break it. I'll make an arrangement. But Ajamila went back to God after associating. He didn't go back to Godhead. He heard the conversations with the Vishnu Dutas and the Yama Dutas. In other words, by hearing the conversation with the Vishnu Dutas, then he was able to stay within the body. And then he went to, where was it, Prabhasakshetra or some other place? I can't remember the name of the place. He went to and he executed devotional service and perfected his life and then went back to Godhead. So what he got was association with devotees. He got association with the Vishnu Dutas. He heard the conversation. And by hearing that conversation, again, the Vishnu Dutas came and they argued with the Yama Dutas. He was still there, hearing everything. And by hearing that conversation, then what happened is by associating with devotees, he was given, as we say, the second chance. And he took full advantage. Yes, much better.
We've heard that this topic has come up by a few times. How the holy name gives freedom from sin. But in this context, simply freedom from sin is useless if you remain in the material world and you go on again sinning and so on. What is the use? So even though the holy name can free one by with material desire and so on from all sinful reactions, still that's not a big deal.
That's
essentially,
right.
Because you're still within the material world.
Kichit kevalya bhakti asudeva parayana. Papa would always quote that verse. Only a rare person who has achieved unalloyed devotional service of the Lord can uproot the weeds of sinful desires without any possibility of their revival. So this is the whole example of the story of Ajamil. It's simply to become relieved from sinful reactions. If one goes out and commits sinful activities again, then what is the value of becoming relieved from sinful reactions? And even if one becomes relieved from sinful reactions, that's still a selfish desire. Because that's a desire to not suffer. And therefore, Krishna Bhakti Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakali Ashanta. Those who desire freedom from all sinful reactions, they still have selfish desires. And therefore, they cannot be peaceful. It doesn't mean simply to be freed from sinful reactions, to be sinless, that one is automatic on the platform of pure, spontaneous devotional service to the Supreme Lord. So, yes, this is a very important point. Very, very important point. Freedom from sinful reactions. Although we hear that it has the potency to relieve from all sinful reactions. And that's what the whole conversation was between Haridas Thakur and Gopal Chakravarti, was it? At the house of Balaramacharya, where Balaramacharya was objecting to Haridas Thakur's statement about how is it possible that simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord one can get liberation. And Gopal Chakravarti was arguing. He said, "How is it possible that this can be happening?" And Haridas Thakur was explaining that actually this is just a byproduct. This is not the actual goal of chanting. The goal of chanting is love of Godhead. Right? It's just a byproduct. You think liberation is so great, but it's nothing. It's nothing. What's real, the greatness of the holy name, is his ability to actually to bring one to Krishna's lotus feet and give one pure devotional service, engage one eternally in rendering service to the Lord, and be situated in ecstatic love of Godhead. From that platform, one will never fall from that position. But simply to get liberation, Aruya Kushchena Param Padam Patata Padantito Nadra Yusmarangraya, you may perform severe austerities and penances to achieve the Mukta Maninas, but they fall down from that position of imagined superiority because they fail to take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. Service. That's the real goal of chanting, to be sheltered in service. And when one actually comes under the shelter of devotional service to Krishna, Krishna takes him, as Prabhupada says, he takes that devotee and holds him very dearly. Says his pure devotee is like a valuable jewel. And therefore, the Lord, when he sees his devotee engaged in his service pure, with pure motivation, he holds on to him very tightly. Just as a person has a very valuable jewel, he won't let him go. So in the same way, Krishna holds on to his pure devotees and protects them. And therefore, that's what makes the relationship with Krishna and the devotee so transcendentally sweet. That Krishna never lets go of his pure devotee and engages him eternally. We hear so many examples of Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat that when Lord Chaitanya was giving out benedictions to the devotees during Mahaprakash Lila, again and again he was saying, "I give you the gift of pure devotional service. I give you the benediction." And all the devotees become completely ecstatic because That's it. There's nothing, Although Lord Chaitanya was taunting Golavaja Shridhar, "Look, you're living like a pauper. I can make you a king. I can give you a kingdom. I can give you this. I can give you that." And Golavaja Shridhar was saying, "No, you just be my master and let me be your servant, birth after birth after birth." And then Lord Chaitanya says, "Look at me, Golavaja. I give you pure devotional service." And all of them, devotees are in ecstasy. This is it. Nothing higher, nothing greater.
Maharaj, thank you for this wonderful lecture. My question is, life is very short, and how 80 to 90% of the life goes in sleeping and then maintaining this body.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now there is very less time for sadhana. On top of that, after hearing so much from saints, still, that doesn't go. So what is, the bhakti...
What hope?
Yeah, what is the... And on top of that, Radha Krishna's pastime and all leelas, they are so blissful, and if we just here, and if a little bit, little portion of it, if we could able to understand, then our life will be perfected. But you know, what are the chances, Maharaj? And how to guard so that, you know, whatever sadhana, small sadhana we are doing, so it is not disturbed, or you know, we are not attracted to any other things, like useless things, Maharaj.
What's the question, Maharaj?
How to maintain our sadhana?
How to maintain determination?
Yeah, determination.
Well, the only way to maintain determination is by associating with devotees who turn. Otherwise, you become weak. that's the best way. Associated with devotees who are determined. By hearing. Without hearing. So one may say, well, how do you maintain the determination to hear? My answer to that is, do you have enough determination to eat every day? Do you? Why? Why? You find the time, don't you? Why?
Otherwise we'll become weak.
Yes. So, you find the time. So, if you find the time to eat every day, you can find the time to hear every day. If you don't...
Here, relating with the body is very easy.
Excuse me?
Relating with the body is very easy. Because
yes.
We are hungry. If we are hungry, you know, our body will become weak. But you know...
The same thing happens spiritually. We're supposed to be spiritually hungry too. And if we don't... Pushti Tushti is Bhakti Parashana Bhava Varakti Anyasha Chasha Chika Asha Kala. The 11th canto of the Bhagavatam states that devotion, direct experience of the Lord, and detachment from material things. These three things come simultaneously for a person who's engaged in devotional service, just as pleasure, nourishment, and relief from hunger come simultaneously and increasingly with each bite for a person who's engaged in eating. When a person is eating, takes a bite and says, wow, this tastes good. When he's eating, he knows his hunger is going away. He doesn't ask anybody else, is my hunger going away? You know it. And when he's eating, he feels strength. Oh, I just did Pandavanyajal Kadas yesterday. I was so weak in the morning. And as soon as I took a little something, wow, great. Right? So, but bhakti is compared to eating. Right in that verse, it's compared to eating. Why? Because it's an experience that we all have. And if we feel ourselves not devotion, we don't feel devotion, we don't experience the presence of the Lord in our life, and we don't feel a detachment awakening, instead we see our attachments increasing, then we know we're not eating. It's clear, but not eating what? Smartavyam satatam vishnavi smartavyam najata chit sarvavidhi nishedashya etiyo eva kankara. Krishna must be remembered, he must never be forgotten. All the rules and prohibitions that you're given in the scriptures are meant to serve these two principles. You have to remember Krishna. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary to that verse, he says, satatam in that verse means every day. Every day. We have to do it. If we don't, then you're going to get weak. So you say, well, I identify more with my body than I identify with the soul. Essentially, that's what you're telling me. Of course that's what you're doing. Of course you identify more with the body. But what does identification with the body lead to? Does it lead to happiness? Bhagavatam says it only leads to suffering. Not only that, guaranteed. Leads to suffering. Having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, knowing that all sense gratification leads to suffering, being disgusted with sense gratification, but still not being able to give it up, my devotee should remain faithful and continue to worship me. He remain happy and continue to worship me with faith. This because my devotee knows that even though sense gratification leads to suffering, and he can't give it up, he sincerely repents when he engages in it. That's the beginning of bhakti. He goes on hearing. Even though he knows, but at least he knows that sense gratification leads to suffering. Even if he can't completely give it up, but he goes on hearing. Without doing that, without being convinced of that, he's not come to the platform of bhakti yet. That's Bhakti Vinod Thakur says that verse is where bhakti begins. He's not come on the platform of bhakti. So one has to hear. Just as a person has to eat, he has to hear. Otherwise, material world forgets. It becomes completely absorbed in the bodily concept of life. He begins to think that everything external. There's a very nice quote actually in this connection. I love this book of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It's got so many wonderful quotes here. But here's a nice quote in this connection. And then he says, he answers the question, do we really need to be introspective? And he says, we have to give up external vision, the vision of material enjoyment and material forms, and become introspective. Until we become introspective, we will continue to depend on external vision. External vision is illusory. And then he gives a nice analogy. He says, if we are eager to know the contents of a letter, we show no patience when looking at the envelope. Right? It's like, you know, remember the old days when devotees get Prabhupada, get a letter from Prabhupada? Right? You see an envelope, they see Bhaktivedanta Swami, you show no patience. Right? No patience whatsoever. You don't waste any time. You know what's inside. You want it. He says, if we're eager to know the contents of a letter, we show no patience when looking at the envelope. If we see objects in this material world as ingredients only for the Lord's service, we will no longer have external vision. The Supreme Lord is situated everywhere in this world. He is situated in the hearts of all living entities. The Lord is always situated in the temple of my heart, just to give me the opportunity to serve Him. When this conviction becomes prominent in our minds that according to the logic, a learned person sees everyone equally, therefore I can perceive my worshipable Lord everywhere, we will find our external, inferior, worldly vision cleared. At that time, I will consider the entire world full of happiness. You've got to get off the external vision, become introspective. If we don't, then we'll never... We won't advance. We'll just keep on spinning our wheels. And then people ask, you know, why am I not advancing? When was it? Devotee asked Prabhupada, why is Maya so strong? And Prabhupada's answer is, why is your determination so weak? It's all quotes from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I read this book like perpetually. So many wonderful quotes.
I have this question.
I don't know how long I'm supposed to go. Last question. It's almost 6 o'clock.
This is in regard to...
I didn't even finish this. Bhajan, but anyways, barely read the first verse. Go ahead.
One of the verses in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna talks about Andhakalesha Mahadeva.
Spada Bhakva Kaleva. Yeah.
So, for practicing devotee, if he leaves the body by chanting, does he go back to Godhead?
Whether devotee goes back home, back to Godhead, or doesn't go back to Godhead, it's really for a devotee, we always quote the verse, Narayana Paraksavi na kutaschini bhivati, swaga pavarga harakeshti na kutaschini. That devotee does not fear any condition of life, whether he's in heaven, whether he's in hell, whether he's liberated, it's all the same. because the devotee's only concern is to be engaged in Krishna's service. That's his concern. Just as we read from this quote, Krishna's service. Okay, I'll give you, I don't know. I don't know if I have enough time to give you this little story. Actually, it happened here in Hartford. I tell this story sometimes. It happened right here in Hartford. I was going to this gym in Manchester. Have you heard the story? You know, when these, I was in the morning while I was exercising, these early morning hours, these two people came and started asking me questions about, you know, what I was doing in the gym. They wanted, they came up to me and said, "You look like you don't belong in here." And I said, "Why?" And then one guy looked me in the face, he said, "Because you look too peaceful." So, anyways, to make a long story short, what happened is that these people, you know, they saw me quite frequently in the morning. I had my headphones on and I was on the cross trainer, I was doing cardio exercises. And so they became interested to inquire. So when they said that, about, they asked about peace, but then somehow they digressed and they started talking about, wanted to know about me. And they were asking all kinds of questions about, what do I do, what's my name? And when they heard of why I traveled to so many places, you know, I told them I traveled to Ukraine, I traveled to Russia, I traveled to India. Like, they were shocked. Like, they, I guess these people had never been out of East Hartford. And they just, and they said, "Really?" They said, "Have you ever been to New Zealand before?" And so I said, "Yes, I've been to New Zealand before." "What's it like? You know, what's the?" And they started, you know, really, and they could see I wasn't really so, you know, I wasn't really so. Their questions wasn't really inspiring, weren't really inspiring me. And then all of a sudden they changed and they started getting back to the original purpose from which they approached me and started then asking questions about internal peace. And they wanted to hear some tips. And then I started speaking to them and it went on and on and on for quite some time. And they saw that somehow I wasn't conscious of it, but they noticed one of them who was on the bicycle was watching me and saw how animated I became when I was talking about all these things. So he said, "I think I've understood." I said, "What is it?" He said, "All these questions about all these places that you're going to, it really didn't really make any difference, did it? Because wherever you go, it doesn't really make any difference because you're not going to take anything. You're going because you have something to give. So you can go anywhere." You know, that was his perception. I didn't say anything. That was his perception. And I said, "Well, yes, you know, that's very perceptive." I said, "That's true." And then they started, and then he started asking more questions and asked me to please come back the next morning for part two. But the point is, it just so happens, like the next morning, I was sitting down. And I was just before chanting my japa, I was meditating on this quote that I just read about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, where he says, we should not chant, we should not think about engaging the Lord in our service. He said, the only purpose for chanting is service. That's it. He said, that is the most important point, is for devotional service. And I started to think, yeah, it really doesn't make any difference where I go. Because even if I'm going back to Godhead, where's the question of going back to Godhead if I'm not absorbed in service? I'm never going to get there. I have to be absorbed in service. Because only by being absorbed in service can you enter into the spiritual world. So more important is whether we go back to Godhead or we take another birth. More important is service. And that was my realization. Just as I learned it from these two people. That doesn't make any difference where I go. Service is more important. Sure, it would be nice to go back to God, but a lot of people, when they think about going back to God, they simply think going back to God is liberation. They think, I want to get out of here. And going back to God sounds like a good place to go.
Is that a selfish desire?
Is that a selfish desire? It's selfish desire if one wants liberation. But if one knows what Bhakti Godhead is and wants to go there, that's not selfish. That's not selfish.
I see the way we treat each other. I don't want to, honestly, I don't want to be here. That's selfish, then, is what you're saying. Make sure I'm.
It's to not, but yes, a lot of people want, they don't want to be here. They want to get out. That's liberation. It's a selfish desire.
However, I don't feel that I just want to go for myself. I'm not going to quote anything, but if you make it to Godhead, I want to be sure I'm saying this right, that He brings generations along with you, along your vine.
Yes, generations past and generations future. But that
I feel like
that means they get
to do that just not for myself, but it's for them as well. It's still selfish.
It means they get an opportunity to associate with a devotee.
It's still selfish.
Again, but I just said it depends on what the motive is. If the motive is I just want to get out of here, that's selfish. If the motive is I want to serve, that's not selfish. It really depends on what is one's motive. Just to get out of here is selfish. But I want to serve. I want to serve Krishna. Serving Krishna is so attractive. I'm learning how to serve Krishna here in this world. And I'm becoming an experience of that. The more I serve Krishna, the more I want to serve Krishna. I want to serve Krishna in the most intimate way. I want to do what's most pleasing to Him. And to meditate on that. Let me serve Him in what's most pleasing to Him. That's meditating on the spiritual world. And one will go there. Krishna will take him there. He'll take him. Because he's meditating on service. His motive is not selfish. But if one simply thinks, I don't want to suffer, that's mukti. That's mukti. Krishna, bhakti nishkama ata eva shanta. Mukti, siddhi, kami. Sakali yashanta. Bhukti means those who want enjoyment. Mukti means those who want liberation. Those siddhi, those who want mystic yoga perfections. Kami, that means they still have lusty desires and therefore they can't be peaceful. Their mind can't be fixed on Krishna. Bhukti mukti spriha yava pisachi hirivartite. As long as the desire of bhukti and mukti within the heart, they're like two witches that haunt one like a ghost. As long as they're there, one will never be able to experience what devotional service is. Like a person who's haunted. He can't experience peace. He's haunted. He's possessed. So bhukti and mukti are like witches that haunt one. One becomes possessed. They can't become peaceful. They can't fix their mind on Krishna. Because they still have selfish desires. Sakali ashanta. Therefore they cannot be peaceful. So to want to go back to God and to serve Krishna, to serve Krishna's devotees, to serve so many devotees, please the devotees, this is pure desire. That's the point I'm making. It's what is one's motive. So if we just think, I want to get out of here, what does that mean? A lot of people want to get out of here. A lot of people just, they want to become nothing, void. I don't want to exist. They stop thinking. It leads to impersonalism. I don't want to even exist. If I have to exist in here, I'm eternal. I have to exist like this forever. Forget it. Don't tell me I'm eternal. I don't want to hear it. Better I don't exist. Because that's their only experience, is suffering. When a devotee uncovers and experiences just a little glimpse of bhakti, then he wants more. He wants to serve more. He wants to please. And then Krishna paves the way for him. He removes all the obstacles. He wants to take that person. He wants him. He removes the obstacles and paves the way to bring him back to Godhead. Just by getting a glimpse of service to him.
Somebody quoted quoted Prabhupada yesterday in the Boston Temple. We were watching his movie, and they said that Prabhupada, somebody asked Prabhupada if it's selfish to ask if they want to go back to Godhead, like if that was the motive. So he said that only, and I think they had quoted Prahlad Maharaj and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he said, I just want to pure, you know, subsist birth after birth after birth. And Prabhupada's answer was that was Prahlad Maharaj and that was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You're not Prahlad Maharaj and you're not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You're, in your heart, you should want to go back to Godhead. That's what somebody
yes, want to go back to Godhead. And Prabhupada taught what going back to Godhead is. It's not liberation. It's more complete than liberation. It's not just liberation. It's service. Service. That is liberated activity. Iha yasya haradasya kamana manasagira nikla vapyavasta su jivan mukta su uchite. For a devotee who is engaged in devotional service with his body, mind, and words, he's already liberated even while he's within the same body. Already liberated. Why? Because devotional service itself is liberated activity. So we should understand what Prabhupada means by saying, well, yes, you should want to go back to Godhead. Means yes, you should want to serve Krishna. And the more we hear about Krishna and eternal associates who are always serving him, the more we become attracted to serve him in the way that they do. It's the service that's attractive. Not the liberation. So Kapila Dev says that a devotee is not even interested in any of the types of liberation. Even to live on the same planet, to have the same form, the same opulences, the different types of liberation. His devotee is simply more interested in service.
Nectar of devotion starts with
that. Huh?
Nectar of devotion, Prabhupada starts with that.
Starts with that. Yes. Point is, there's no way around it. We can avoid it, but there's no way around service, which begins with chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Is that first the sixth canto of the Bhagavad Gita? It's not coming to mind. Anyways, yes, maybe, whatever Krishna desires, that's where the devotee will go. Whatever Krishna wants. Prabhupada taught us that. Even when Prabhupada was very, very ill, and devotees asked, he asked us if we can pray. Prabhupada said, yes, you can pray. He said, my dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire, if you so desire, please save Srila Prabhupada. What was the exact wording in that prayer? Is that, my dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire? Prabhupada was always subordinate to Krishna's will, whatever his decision was. I remember it was in 1974 when Prabhupada was really sick.
It's a pretty simple concept.
Concept?
Yeah, like whatever Krishna desires. You can't do much anyways.
Yeah, but it's a simple concept, but sometimes we come into conflict with it, with our own desires. If we're not careful. Unfortunately, bhakti does not mean that we ourselves have to take responsibility for getting rid of our conflicting desires. Fortunately, bhakti means that Krishna will help us as long as we endeavor to remember Him, to hear about Him, and to serve Him. That's the difference between the devotee and the non-devotee. The non-devotee thinks that by my own strength, I'll overcome. But the devotee always understands that I'm completely dependent on Krishna. Okay. I think we'll end here. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for
listening. Holiness Narayana Maharaj ki. Jai.